Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Tatzria Metzora. This is a reprise podcast from 2006 by Rabbi Meir Schweiger. In addition to this podcast series, Pardes faculty members and Pardes students also write a number of different blogs. Here are two recent posts and their associated blogs I'd like to call to your attention. The first is the blog These and Those, which is from the students of Pardes. And there was a blog posting recently about a student who trained to be a shochet, a slaughterer of animals. And his blog post is very interesting. Another one is from Rabbi Alex Israel. He's a blogger in addition to being a member of the Pardes faculty and a frequent contributor to the podcast series. His blog, he has a recent post, Rediscovering the Kotel, a Magical Night at the Kotel itself. So both of these posts are available. I've put the links in the show notes, and you're welcome to check them out. This week, as I mentioned, this is a reprise podcast from 2006 by Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha, in fact, are two parshiot. Tatzria Metzora, which actually are a unit. And generally they go together, other than in leap years when they're separated. And the two together deal with the general topic of what's called Tuma Hayotzeit Migufo Shel Adam, of ritual impurity, which is connected with a person's body. And within that category of ritual impurity that is connected with a person's body, you have five categories. First, yoledet, a woman who gives birth. Second, mitzora, what is generally called someone with leprosy, although this is seen by many commentaries as being a misnomer. The third is Zav, a man who has a flow. The fourth is Nida, a woman who is menstruant. And the fifth is Azava, a woman who bleeds in excess of her menstrual cycle. All of these categories of ritual impurity have implications in terms of the temple and in terms of eating holy produce. So that one who is in these states, yoledet nida, is excluded from being able to come in the domain of the temple, in the temple courtyard, and are also excluded from being able to eat holy produce. I think we've once discussed the whole idea of ritual purity and impurity, but nevertheless, I would like to reiterate it, and specifically today focus on tzara'at, what is generally called leprosy. And in fact, it's interesting that chapters 13 and chapter 14 are the two sections which are in the middle of these two parshiot that deal with tzara'at. So first let me begin by saying that there are three types of tzara'at. There's what's called tzara'at aguf, on a person's body, different spots on a person's body that create the state of tum'ah, of ritual impurity. There's tzara'at habeget, of clothing. And there's also tzara'at habatim, leprosy of one's home. In the latter two cases, the tzara'at is a result of seeing spots on your clothing, spots on your walls, which you can't attribute to any particular cause. And the color of these spots are either green or red or some shade thereof. On the other hand, when it comes to the spots on a person's body, what makes you impure are four shades of white. In the case of tzara'at, the word which comes up again and again describing it is nega. For those of you who have a Tanakh, if you look, for example, in chapter 13, verse 2, it says, Adam ki yeva or besaro se'et o sapachat o vaheret, v'hayava or besaro lenegat sara'at. And then if you look at succeeding verses, verse 3, v'ra'a kohen etan nega. If you look at verse 4, at the end, v'hisgir ha'kohen etan nega. If you look at verse 5, v'ra'a kohen b'yom ha'shivine ha'nega. And verse 9, nega tzara'at. And in fact, there is a masechet in the Mishnah which deals with the laws of tzara'at, which is called masechet nega'im. So that evidently the rabbis saw this word nega as being essential to the concept of tzara'at. Now generally, the word nega is translated as a plague or as an affliction. But in fact, the root of the word is nun gimel ayin, which means touch. And therefore, there are commentaries, especially Hirsch in his commentary, who says that the word nega indicates that what's happening now is the touch of God. In other words, tzara'at is not something which is a disease, which is some sort of natural phenomenon, but tzara'at is seen as being something extraordinary, supernatural. This is not just Hirsch's understanding. This, in fact, is the classic rabbinic understanding, which is also highlighted by both Nachmanides in his commentary on chapter 13 in Leviticus, verse 47, and also Maimonides in the Mishneh Torah at the end, the very last law which deals with tzara'at, goes into a whole discussion about how the laws, and specifically of tzara'at of the house and of tzara'at of clothing, is something which is totally out of the natural order. To perhaps get an understanding of this idea of the supernatural quality of tzara'at, we should look at the story in Bamidbar, chapter 12, where Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Moshe, and specifically about a certain Cushite woman that Moshe took. And without going into the details of what exactly were they talking about, what was the issue that was at stake, I'm more interested in looking at God's reaction. And this appears in verse 9, chapter 12, verse 9 in Bamidbar. It says, Vayichar af Hashem bam, that God is angry at Miriam and Aaron, Vayelach, and God departs. And then it says, Veheanan, and the cloud, Sar me'al ha'ohel, departs from above the tent, Vehine Miriam mitzorat kashaleg. And Miriam is now mitzorat as snow. And in fact, the rabbis understand, I mentioned earlier, that basically tzara'at is when you have one of four shadows of white, of spots that appear on your body. And in fact, the most intense form is the one where it's white as snow, which means Miriam has the most intense form of tzara'at. What fascinates me is the juxtaposition of the cloud departing and Miriam has tzara'at. And the way that I understand this is that when the cloud departs, where the cloud is a symbol of God's presence, all of a sudden Miriam has tzara'at, which would therefore mean that tzara'at is an indicator. And if I want to go back to what we said before, that somehow this is the touch of God, it's as if God has now touched you in such a way that indicates that God's presence has left you. On a certain level, a piece of God, your tzelem Elokim, is no longer there. And in fact, one could say that the appearance of white spots has the echo or has the symbol of a cadaver that's pale, that's lost its vitality. So that on a certain level, when we look at the next pasuk, or actually in verse 12, when Aaron says to Moshe, please pray on behalf of Miriam, and he says, al nat tehi kamet, let her not be as a dead body. The rabbis on this verse derive the idea that one who has tzarat is as if one is dead. Conceptually, it would seem to be, having tzarat makes you dead in the sense that God has left your body on some level, and God is indicating that to you, which therefore means that the state of tzarat, which is not a natural disease, but specifically one brought about by God, is an external manifestation of an internal problem. The internal problem being that God has left you. And it's very interesting that the rabbis in the Talmud, in Masechet Arachin, on page 16a, Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, make the following comment. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Al Shiv'ad Dvarim Nigaim Baim. For seven things, plagues, Nigaim Baim, where Nigaim is clearly a code word for Tzara'at. Tzara'at comes upon you for one of seven reasons. First, Alashon Hara, for evil talk, evil speech. The next one, al shfichut damim, for bloodshed. Al shvuat shav, for false oaths. Al gilui arayot, for sexual promiscuity. Al gasut haruach, for arrogance. Al gezel, theft. Al tzarut ha'ayin, for miserliness. It's very interesting that tzarat is seen as being somehow a punishment for someone who is engaged in a variety of social sins, where the first on the list is Lashon Hara, evil speech. The fact that evil speech is singled out is based on the story of Miriam that we just looked at. Without again going into the details, somehow God sees that what Miriam and Aaron are saying is a negative statement about Moshe, which is unfounded, which is misguided, which undermines the magnitude of who Moshe is, so that God has to point out to Miriam, don't you realize who you're talking about? You're talking about somebody who speaks to me face to face. How could you have the audacity, as it says in chapter 12, verse 8, to not be afraid, to not be in awe of saying these things about my servant Moses? And therefore, there's a certain element here of measure for measure. If you undermine the human dignity of another person by evil speech, by stealing, by being miserly, by not taking them in, then on some level your human dignity has been undermined. And God is now manifesting that by having white spots on your body. It's very interesting that tzara'at is the one category of ritual impurity which does not happen automatically. In every other situation, for example, if I touch a dead body, the moment I touch the dead body, automatically I become ritually impure. A woman who has a menstrual cycle, the moment the blood flows, she becomes ritually impure. A man who has a seminal emission, the moment it happens, he is ritually impure. But in the case of a mitzorah, it's not that the moment you have a white spot, you automatically become ritually impure, but you have to go to the Kohen, who has to declare you a mitzora, as one who is ritually impure. And according to the halacha, which is discussed in the Mishnayot, in Masechet Nigaim, if for whatever reason the Kohen does not declare you a mitzora, you're not a mitzora. And in fact, we find in the Mishnah that on the three festivals, the Kohanim would close up shop and would not declare people mitzoraim. It's important to note that the Kohen is not brought into the picture because he's a doctor. There's a very clear differentiation between Kohanim and doctors. And also the Kohen is not brought in because he's a scholar. Because we also find, according to the halacha, that if you had a Kohen who is not knowledgeable, that he would actually call in an expert who would say, these are the signs of tzara'at, but you need the Kohen to make the formal declaration. Which means that having a Kohen is not because I need his expertise as much as because of the role which he plays, the formal role. Who is a Kohen? A Kohen is somebody who serves in the Mishkan. And in that capacity, on the one hand, he is the person who comes in contact with the presence of God that's revealed in the Mishkan. So that he is the person who should be able to say, yes, this is a nega. This is a manifestation of God, of the touch of God. The Kohen is also the one who represents the community, who is the spiritual leader of the community. And in both capacities, the Kohen now says to the Mitzora, you are Tameh. You are somebody who has been touched by God because you have somehow violated our community. You've undermined the spiritual fabric of our community. And in fact, if we look at, go back to our Parshiot, in Vayikra, in chapter 13, in verse 46, it says, Kol yemei asher hanega bo yitma, for the whole time that the nega is in this person, he will be impure. Tamehu, he's impure. Badad yeshev, he shall dwell alone. Michutz lamachane moshavo, outside the camp will be his dwelling place. And here is another way in which the mitzora is different from every other person who is ritually impure. Someone who comes in contact with a dead body is excluded from entry into the temple or the temple courtyard. Someone who has a flow, or a woman who is menstruant, or who gives birth, is excluded not only from the temple, but from the temple mount. But a mitzora is excluded from the camp. And according to the halacha, mitzoraim would have to be sent out of all cities that were walled from the time of Joshua, where the most clear example of such a city is Jerusalem. Which means that mitzoraim were not allowed in the city of Jerusalem. They were excluded. And when it says in verse 46, Badad Yeshev, it's even taking it one step further. There's no concept of what we would call a mitzora colony, but that each mitzora has to be somehow isolated from the other ones. The isolation is not for medicinal purposes. It's not there in order to prevent contagion, to prevent the spreading of a disease. The isolation is because of a spiritual, existential nature. The mitzora who has violated the holiness, the spirituality, the bondedness of the community is now isolated as a way of saying to him, you have no place in our community. I have been pushing this idea of tzara'at being this touch of God, a punishment. But in fact, it has another aspect to it. And that is brought up in the Tosefta, in Nigaim, where it says that when the Kohen would come to the Metzorah and declare him such, before he declares him a Metzorah, he says the following: know that Tzara'at comes upon a person because they've sinned. Look into your actions and realize if you repent, if you change your ways, it will go away. But if not, then it will continue to be there and you will remain isolated, ostracized from our community. Which means that Tzara'at is actually not a punishment, but Tzara'at is actually an opportunity, an education. It's feedback. It's where God is now giving this person an external manifestation of something internally problematic. It's a way of God indicating to that person, there's something wrong with you. Go out of the camp. Search your soul. Change. So that you can now come back into the camp and appreciate that being a member of a community requires that you be responsible, that you show respect, that the same dignity that you would like to have for yourself, you should extend to others. It's kind of ironic that in many ways, Tzara'at is actually a blessing because people are able to now get feedback as a way of being able to change and to grow. And in the end, to truly be part of a community. So that nowadays, we don't have Tzara'at. Nowadays, we live in a reality where we're not getting this direct feedback from God. It's much harder now to perhaps see those situations when we have violated the community. So that perhaps it's important for us, when we read the section of Tzara'at, which is not practically applicable nowadays, to be able to realize what is Tzara'at addressing. And I would like to end with this note. I mentioned earlier that a Metzorah is described as one who is dead. The laws of ritual purity and impurity have to do with life and death. Being in a state of impurity is a result of having contact with death or having had an experience that on some level deadens me, on some level impacts on my human dignity, damages my human dignity. The whole process of purification is to reaffirm my human dignity, to reaffirm my occupation with life. If I am somebody who's engaged in Lashon Hara, the rabbis in a number of places say that speaking evilly of somebody is tantamount to a death warrant. And unfortunately, and I speak now for Israel, but I'm sure this is true in America as well, there are too many situations, and even if there are few, but a few is too many, of where you have exposés that are written of people who have been involved in all kinds of criminal activity, stealing, embezzling, which has resulted in those people committing suicide. Where somebody could say, well, what did I do? I wrote an exposé. I just wanted the people to know. But your exposé led to somebody taking their life. We also know of situations where there is propaganda. Propaganda which depicts individuals and as Jews. We have certainly been the victims of all types of propaganda that have then encouraged people to murder us. So that speech is a very powerful weapon that can be abused, that can destroy. Theft can be something that can totally unravel a society. Exploitation. To what degree is it that a person's dignity can be destroyed because they've been exploited? Slave labor. So perhaps from the Metzorah, we need to learn how careful we have to be in not creating tumah, in not creating this damaging of the human dignity of other people, of the presence of God in our society, but how that we should be preoccupied with tahara, with trying to highlight, accentuate, magnify the human dignity of the people around us, and by so doing, to magnify our own dignity. And hopefully, if we are able to understand that we live in a world which is imperfect, which has tumah, but our goal is to bring tahara, that by somehow bringing out the dignity of others, we bring out our own dignity, and through that, create a more perfect society, a more perfect world. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.